Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the show that we've all been waiting for. Me, maybe more than you. But I'm glad you've been waiting, and I'm glad you're here. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Original thought being that derived from biblical thought, which was the original thought. After all, the book starts within the beginning. So it goes all the way back. Encourage you to read it. Yes, indeed. Now, should I just go right to the news? Because I haven't had anything interesting happen in my life that I want to talk about. I just want to let sleeping dogs lie this week. We're just going to, no football interruptions this week. Since the entire city of Denver has pretty much turned off football. It's like a graveyard this Sunday. Anyway, I was called upon this morning down at Denver Bible Church to preach the Sunday sermon, and I was tempted, because I couldn't think of what to preach about, I was tempted to actually use this first story and just base my sermon on it. This comes from the Good Religion File, and it's a few good quotes from the Reverend Franklin Graham. Franklin Graham is the once wayward son of Billy Graham, and he's reported in CNS News this week discussing America's culture of death. In fact, he said the following. He said, America is increasingly embracing a culture of death that echoes what has occurred in Europe. Unquote. Now, what had just happened in Europe were the Charlie Hebdo and the kosher store massacres in France. And Franklin goes on to say that in places like Europe, where Christianity has been in decline, as the deceptive forces of secularism and materialism have spread across the continent, it's not surprising to find the practice of euthanasia becoming entrenched. And I would posit that Charlie Hebdo and the authors there, who are now cooking and roasting in hell, which is exactly where they always said they wanted to go, they're proud atheists, you know. Charlie Hebdo represents the forces of secularism coming into direct conflict with the forces of satanic Islamism. That's my commentary, not Franklin's. But Franklin does go on, talks a little bit more about euthanasia. He says the euthanasia movement is disguised now as death with dignity. And meanwhile, pregnancies, for every 1,000 live births in the United States, over 200 pregnancies end with a murdered child through abortion. He calls it a murdered child, does Franklin Graham. So 20%, right? My math has never been that strong. 200 out of 1,000, that's 20%. So in America, we're killing 20% of our children. And he also says that the culture seems to be focused on death. He says at least a half a dozen primetime television shows are strangely enamored with death and gore. And he names a show or two, and I won't give them any press here. He says these TV shows, when combined with hugely popular video games, violent video games, demonstrate how obsessed with death our culture has become. But he says death isn't a joke, folks, and it's not entertainment. No. Franklin says the Bible says that once a person dies, he will face the judgment of God. Death is serious, eternal business, says one Franklin Graham. I couldn't agree more. Very serious business. He says a culture that treats death as mere fantasy and amusing entertainment does it at its peril. What's the answer? Franklin asks. What's the solution? He says our only hope is bold biblical Christianity. He says life is short. Choose sin and face eternal damnation. Damnation, he says. But choose God and gain eternal life. Well, thank you, Franklin, for almost writing my sermon. I decided to write my own sermon, and I guess it was serviceable. I mean, nobody walked out on me. Anyway, the sermon was entitled, God Loves Wisdom, God Hates Socialism. And you can order it from Denver Bible Church if you want. Anyway, you'll get a fine big dose of bold biblical Christianity right here on the Weekly Worldview, not unlike the folks at Denver Bible Church this morning got a dose of bold biblical Christianity. That's the good religion file. And let me look. That's pretty much where the good religion file. No, actually, we have a little more. But first, let's go to the silly religion file. Yes, the silly religion file, Tyndale House, the famous Christian publisher, has announced that it will stop selling the book entitled The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven. Do you remember this book? It seems to me I remember a teary-eyed interview done by Glenn Beck and this young man and his father. I could be wrong. Glenn Beck was crying, but maybe he was interviewing someone else. But I thought it was these two. The author of the book's name is Alex Malarkey, and his father was named Kenneth Malarkey, ironically enough. Turns out the whole story was malarkey. That's an American euphemism for just not true, I suppose. Alex, the young man who wrote the book, now he suffered severe injuries in a car accident when he was 6 years old. He went into a coma for a couple of months and came back talking about miracles, angels, and life beyond this world. And the Washington Post is reporting that his book became popular in the genre of heavenly tourism. Heavenly tourism, yeah. Alex, the child, he was 6 years old when the accident happened. They published the book in 2010. I think when Glenn Beck wept over him and his father, I think the kid was around 13 or 14 years old. Anyway, Alex has recanted his testimony about the afterlife. He says, I did not die. I did not go to heaven. He said, I did it because I thought it would get me attention. And when I made the claims, I had never read the Bible. Well, now he has read the Bible. And he says that what he wrote in the book was unbiblical. And he says, people have profited from lies. Now, I did not know this, but over a year ago, young Alex Malarkey's mother had posted a statement on her blog stating that, she wanted the publisher to pull the book. She said, it's puzzling to watch the book not only continue to sell, but to continue, for the most part, not to be questioned. Well, now it's been questioned and, in fact, recanted by the young author, who's obviously manipulated by his father. And I'm sure other people who wanted to make a lot of money. The kid's mother, by the way, says that Alex has not received monies from the book, nor have his medical needs been funded by it. The young man still has significant medical problems, and perhaps the book was a desperate attempt by his father to raise the money he knew he would need, and so anyway, he lied. It's encouraging that young Alex read the Bible and realized that what he had said was unbiblical. That's encouraging. But still lands him and his dad at the top of the silly religion file, which is where we originally filed the very first story on this book, the silly religion file. Silly, superstitious religion. Yeah, we don't play that around here. All right, now let's move on into the bad religion file, straight up bad religion. The Tibetan spiritual leader, Dalai Lama, says he said last Tuesday that indeed he is a Marxist. That's what he said. He said, as far as social economic theory is concerned, I am a Marxist. He says he admires Marxism because its focus on reducing the gap between the rich and the poor. He says equal distribution is very crucial to me. Now, that's not biblical. Oh, yeah, but he's a pagan. He's the Dalai Lama. Says straight up, he says he's a Marxist. I think the Pope claimed this week, or was it last week, that he's not a communist? Yeah, when you have to tell people you're not a communist, you might want to look at what you've been saying to make people like me think you're a communist. Anyway, I don't know the Dalai Lama from Adam, but apparently he's a Marxist. That keeps him firmly ensconced in the bad religion file, where he will remain. Probably even after he dies, he'll end up in the bad religion file. But since we're on the topic of religion, since I preached a sermon this morning, we'll move on to the old-time religion file. As reported by the New York Daily News, Staples Mill Road Baptist Church has dismissed April Kellum. Yes, she was working for this Baptist church, and the leadership of the church gave her an ultimatum. Either announce a wedding date with her partner, James, or face termination. Now, it seems a little strict that a Baptist church would say, hey, you've got to tell us when you're getting married or you're fired. But there are extenuating circumstances. Yes, April and James are expecting their first child together in April. And now the church knew that she was engaged and that she was shacking up with her fiancé when she was hired. But now that there's a baby involved, the Baptists are like, well, we've got to draw the line somewhere. And so they fired her. Now the couple say they intend on getting married someday, but they want to do it in their own time. Yes. The young lady, April, says, quote, I just don't want to go to the courthouse and have somebody marry us. I want to have a big wedding with all my family and friends. At which point someone said, yeah, but you got yourself pregnant. Unfortunately, that means you have to go to the courthouse. And you need to get that taken care of. You know, this is old-time religion here. That's right. I'm surprised her daddy didn't show up with a shotgun and tell James, hey, it's time for you to get married. Now, she says that she grew up in a Christian home and a Christian church her whole life. Now, that is not surprising at all. In fact, that's just par for the course at the average Christian church. You got people shacking up and having kids out of wedlock and basically just generally setting a bad example for the youngsters in the church. And now a church stands up and actually does something about it. And guess what? The young couple are not only shacking up, they're now considering legal action. Well, I think the first legal action they might want to consider is getting married. But no, they very well may sue the church, and I'm sure the ACLU has lawyers stacked up six deep in front of her house just waiting to bring charges, a civil action against the Staples Mill Road Baptist Church for firing a girl, for setting a bad example, and by the way, breaking the rules of the church. April said, the mom, she said, the only one who can judge me is God himself. Yeah. Now, a couple of things. First of all, God's not the only one who can judge you. The people who employ you can also judge you and even fire you. And another thing I noted about this story, the father in the story is mentioned at the very beginning, but he's virtually invisible. Never asked a single question, never referred to again in the story, except the acknowledgement of his paternity at the beginning of the story. And I've noticed this in news coverage over the last, 15 years or so, is that fathers are virtually invisible. And it's as if they don't even exist. And when a church, a pastor, a Baptist minister stands up and says, wait a minute, we need to do something about this, the news, the folks here at the New York Daily News, they can't bring themselves to ask the father if he has any opinion on anything. It's as if the poor sap doesn't even exist. Anyway, we hope that they're married by now. It's better for the kids in the church and in their own family. They both have other children from a previous marriage. I guess they think that absolves them of the responsibility to do the Christian thing and get married when you find yourself pregnant, for crying out loud. It's right there in the Bible. All right. Now, quickly, before the break, let's go to the science, really, file. And for this, we go to the world of basketball, believe it or not. I'm not a fan of basketball, and I'm not really familiar with these people, but perhaps some of you people are, and you'll find this somewhat interesting. Bill Walton has presented Dave Pasch with a cake and a book. He presented it to him live on TV during a sports broadcast. Now, Bill Walton, I'm familiar with. He's a famous basketball player from 30 or 40 years ago. Dave Pasch, I don't know. I think these are ESPN guys. Is there any other kind? Yeah, I think they're ESPN guys. Anyway, the book that Bill Walton presented to Dave Pasch was On the Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. And then he made a smart aleck comment about Pasch, about how he believes in science and evolution. He says, I believe in science and evolution, says Bill Walton. I've been to the Grand Canyon, unquote. And he just leaves it at that, as if the Grand Canyon somehow supports evolution. I don't know where he gets that idea. Well, I know where he gets that idea. That's because that's what we were all told from the time we were 5 years old and began our indoctrination in the government schools. And Bill Walton, being a semi-literate basketball player, he just bought right into it. Well, not missing a beat, Dave Pasch suggested that it was best that they take a break, and maybe during the break we can talk about some irreducible complexity and I can straighten Bill out here. I like that. Irreducible complexity. Now, the Breitbart reporter goes on to say that irreducible complexity has allegedly been debunked, but it still remains quite popular among creationist types. And they just leave it at that. You can go, they link to a Google book that allegedly debunks irreducible complexity, but it's fairly lacking in its debunkery. I read about four pages of it, and it doesn't debunk anything at all. It simply splatters a lot of words on the page, big words, multisyllabic words, designed to make people like Bill Walton think that the people who debunked irreducible complexity are obviously smarter than he is, and so he just accepts their opinion. Now, you folks remember last year, Keith Law ridiculed a baseball analyst, Kurt Schilling, for making statements in favor of intelligent design. Just intelligent design. He didn't say God created the heavens and the earth or anything about that. Just that it seems like there's an intelligent designer behind things. And he got made fun of, and well, there was trouble in the sports world. I didn't know that sports people even thought about such things as origins, but it you know what this does? It reveals that the debate and opinions about origins, they matter across the socio-political spectrum. It's an important topic that just about everybody is interested in hearing about and talking about. And if you want to find out if irreducible complexity has been debunked, well, I suggest you go to Real Science Radio and just start listening and hear some of the modern papers and some of the evolutionary publications and decide for yourself if irreducible complexity has been debunked or if Darwin knew anything about the origin of the species or anything like that, because you might find out that what you started hearing in third grade was very similar to a lot of other stuff you started hearing in third grade. Yeah, it was all just fiction. Hey, take a listen. Tell me, do you like what you hear? If they'll turn you on, just say a word, I'm gone. I know, ain't nothing wrong with your ear. Hey, check it all out. Better look now, it just might be too late. My life's gonna change tonight. It's gotta be a better life. Take a picture, sweetie, I ain't got time to wait. Oh, baby, you know, that reminds me of a quote from our good friend Lawrence Krauss, who tells the young girls in college that he's trying to impress that we're all born from stars. We're all made of star stuff. He says, forget Jesus dying for you. A star died so you could have life. And then, of course, if you want to discuss where the stars came from with Lawrence, well, he ambles down a road in which nothing is actually something. And anyway, the universe from nothing. And he never really gets around to answering the actual question of actual origins. And so we'll keep working on that here at the Weekly Worldview. And, of course, they work on it every week, every Friday at realscienceradio.com. I suggest that you check in there every Friday. Download it. It's a half hour. Definitely worth your while. All right. So we move from star stuff to the Justice File. This is an unbelievable story from the New York Daily News. Big story out in Manhattan. A four-year-old girl, Ariel Russo, was run down and killed by Franklin Reyes, who's just a thug, ran over this four-year-old girl with his car and killed her. And a Manhattan judge had offered him a plea deal that would have given him only a maximum of 4 years in prison and that would have eventually left this young thug with a clean record. Now, he killed this little girl through his negligence and through his criminal behavior. But the judge was ready to issue a plea deal, but then Franklin Reyes offended the judge. Yes, the judge found out that Franklin Reyes had been arrested several times since he ran over and killed Ariel Russo. And so the judge finally drew the line. Yeah, this thug had been arrested 3 times since he killed this little girl, including once for assaulting a police officer. So this Manhattan Supreme Court Justice, Gregory Caro, finally said, well, that's where we're going to draw the line. We're not going to offer you a plea deal anymore. This punk was speeding and driving without a license when he killed this four-year-old little girl, Ariel Russo. And even in Manhattan, people were shocked by this story. For even offering a plea deal, the judge needs to be put on trial. Prosecutors say they want to get up to 15 years.
15?
Yeah, 15 years for killing a little girl, a four-year-old girl. Can you believe that?
3 days.
Reckless homicide? You're right. His sentence should be 3 days, after which he should meet the Lord. And he should fall into the hands of the living God. That's what the prosecutor should be going for in a case of reckless homicide. But they were all ready to wheel and deal. Yeah, he's a full-on thug. But you know, the justice system specializes in processing and reprocessing thugs, murderers. And that's where we are. And it's just now. Meanwhile, from the Parenthood File, a couple of parents are being investigated down in Silver Spring, Georgia. Oh, I'm sorry, Silver Spring, Maryland, on Georgia Avenue. Because they let their children walk home alone. Right? These two parents agreed to let their children, how old were these kids? A 6-year-old and a 10-year-old. They let their kids walk home about a mile to their house. The children made it about halfway, and then the police picked them up after someone reported seeing them. Now, I don't want to get into a judgment against these parents because I don't really know all the details. I know that I live in the suburbs and in a fairly, what people would consider a good community, the nicer part of town. But I don't let my kids walk home. Well, at 10 and 6, would we have done that? Maybe, possibly. Maybe if the 10-year-old had a pistol.
No.
I really don't want to get into judging these parents because I don't know all the details. But what I wanted to make note of is that our society is now so paranoid because of the crime epidemic and crimes against children specifically. Parents are so worried that they look out, they see a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old walking a few blocks by themselves and they freak out and call the police. I mean, that is a commentary on our society right there, that they would feel like they have to do that. And then that the police would go and pick the kids up out of fear for their safety. That, to me, that just says, you know, where are we living? Are we really free? Is this a free country anymore if your kids can't walk a mile to their house without everyone being up in arms? And now of course, they're being investigated by Child Protective Services, and, well, it's just going to be a mess. Child Protective Services showed up a couple hours after the police dropped the kids off. The police gave the parents a stern warning about trying to act like free, civilized people. Don't you realize you can't do that in this country? Child Protective Service, they say, CPS may look for guidance to a state law about leaving children unattended. The law there says that kids under 8 must be left with a reliable person who is at least 13 years old.
That 13-year-old never gets kidnapped.
No, nothing's ever as bad as ever happened to a 13-year-old. Well, I would say, I would amend that law. The 13-year-old should have a pistol. The CPS worker required the parents to sign a safety plan, pledging, they told the dad he had to sign this pledge that he would not leave his children unsupervised until CPS followed up. Now, at first, he refused to sign it, but he changed his mind when he was told that his children would be removed from the home if he did not comply. So he complied. Anyway, so it's just, on the one hand, you got a thug kills a 4-year-old girl and they're ready to offer him a plea deal. Mm-hmm. And you got parents who, and we out here, we civilians, we can't let our kids walk a mile in the suburbs of the city without everybody freaking out. It's just a commentary on where we are in what we thought was a free country. But are you really free if you're living in fear? Living in fear does not equal freedom. And if your children can't be at liberty to walk around their own neighborhood, well, we've lost our liberties, lost our freedom. We've surrendered it to the proctocracy who make their living processing criminals in and out of the justice system and have no intention nor desire to reduce the actual crime rates or to make criminals afraid to commit their crimes.
Yeah, like
that would hurt.
Law.
That would be bad for business. What's that?
Like the puffer law
thing. Oh, yeah, the puffer law. Here in Colorado, we just went through a very cold snap, and we had the annual local news story about how it's against the law to leave your car running outside when it's 6 degrees below zero. That would be far too civilized. If you have to get into a freezing car because you're so afraid that the criminals are going to steal it, and the police, and they, I'm sorry, the legislature feels like they have to pass a law against warming up your car like a civilized person? Are you really free? I mean, that's just, it's just a sad commentary on society. All right, so let's move quickly before the break to reason number 869 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. As reported over at WorldNet Daily, a California school district has had to post an online defense of its use of Planned Parenthood personnel for public school sex education courses. Yeah, that's right. Planned Parenthood personnel invited into the government school to teach your daughter about sex. One of the workers calls herself a pleasure activist, and another does demonstrations at a nearby pornography shop.
No.
They were teaching 13 and 14-year-old students at high school. I don't know if I can get into what all they, well, the Planned Parenthood personnel presented the class with the genderbread person. Have you heard of the genderbread person? It's like a gingerbread person. But instead of deciding what type of candy to use for the eyes and the mouth, the kids get to use it to explain which sex they might want to be. Uh-huh. These Planned Parenthood perverts were teaching these impressionable young high school students that their gender was not necessarily fixed. WorldNet Daily reports that parents are now more concerned than ever. Yes. They're not concerned enough. But hopefully this will get their attention. Maybe this is the last straw for some parents, and they'll actually get their kids out. Yeah, I already... Oh, here's what the school posted in defense of their employment of Planned Parenthood deviants. Two schools within our district are using highly trained educators from Planned Parenthood this year to assist in the delivery of sexual health and HIV/AIDS prevention education. Under the direct supervision of the credentialed classroom teacher and within the requirements and parameters of the education code. So just get off us, shut up, and leave us alone. We're doing everything by the rules. They also said in the same statement that the instruction is age appropriate and that the value of abstinence is emphasized. And they did give parents prior notification of the topics to be covered and inform parents that a Planned Parenthood educator will be presenting at the school. We told you, we gave you the opportunity to opt out. Well, I hope some parents will take up the school on the opportunity to opt out and opt out not only from examination of the genderbread person and sex ed classes, but opt out of the entire government school gulag. It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. And we move now into the politics file. Mitt Romney has announced his three-pronged campaign platform to take the White House in 2016 and save America. Yes, what are his three prongs in his platform? Number one, make the world safer. Safer. Not safe. Safer. Not defeat our enemies and destroy ISIS. Destroy the enemies of America who would bring terror to our shores or to the shores of our allies. But just to make the world safer. That's the best we can hope for from Mitt. Number two, the second leg of the stool, so to speak. I'm sorry. The second leg of the Mitt Romney stool sample, offering opportunity for all Americans. That's a nebulous way of basically saying he's willing to involve the government even more in private business, and especially occupational education. Let's get the government involved in that. Start writing some checks. Number three, lifting people out of poverty. That's the third leg of the Mitt Romney stool sample that we just received. Lifting people out of poverty, which can be translated increasing welfare. Yes, increasing welfare. Let's see, do we have a... I thought we had a quote from Mitt. Now, I can't do a Mitt Romney impersonation. It can't be done. Mitt Romney is... There's simply nothing about Mr. Romney that lends itself to an impersonation, so I apologize. It simply can't be done. But Mitt Romney does say, quote, "Under President Obama, the rich have gotten richer. Income equality has gotten worse." I thought that was a Bernie Sanders quote. He's the socialist up in Vermont or New Hampshire or something. I thought that was a Bernie Sanders quote Turns out it's a Mitt Romney quote. So he's learned his lesson about acting like a free market capitalist. He knows that that just doesn't sell. He's going to throw in with the socialists. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can order my sermon from, what is today, January 18th? Order the sermon from Denver Bible Church, January 18th. God loves wisdom, God hates socialism. And he's not very happy with Mitt Romney sounding like Bernie Sanders as he announces his three-legged stool sample before he submits that to the electorate before he runs. Mitt also says that he plans in the coming election, should he choose to run, he plans to be more open about his role in the Mormon church. And I'm sure that'll help him a lot, too. So, as if he couldn't alienate the base anymore, he has to remind us that he's also a pagan. That's okay. So maybe we can put a fork in Mitt, huh? No, I have predicted that he will run. But I have not predicted that he'll win the nomination, because I'm still holding out hope that there are a few sane Republicans left who have not given up the ideas of biblical morality and free market capitalism. Those are the things that are going to save the country from this present unpleasantness, economic and moral, civilizational, cultural, and all that. Yeah, biblical morality, free market economics. That's what will save them. But Mitt Romney, well, let's just leave him aside. Let's move on to Nancy Pelosi. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, she's the senator who, well, she came to Washington to do good, and she's done very well indeed. I think her personal wealth is somewhere above $5 million. Her husband's about to get $1 billion in commissions, selling post office buildings, probably to other government agencies. But just move along, folks. There's nothing to see here. But in addition to being involved in the nefarious distribution of commissions related to the sales of U.S. Postal Service buildings that her husband's involved in, Nancy Pelosi announced in a closed-door meeting that she intended to name the first Muslim to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And she said it with a straight face, and the Republicans bent over and said, "Yes, ma'am, may we have another?" She had that big gavel. She's just spanking the Republicans with it. "Yes, ma'am, may we have another?" So this Muslim, let's see, who is this fellow? Andre Carson, a Muslim out of Indiana. She intends to put him on this national security-focused panel in the House. And Politico, in the article, reminds us that he already serves on the House Armed Services Committee and worked for the Department of Homeland Security. So he's a vetted Muslim. He's one of the moderate, I suppose. He's part of the moderate Syrian opposition or something like that. Anyway, it's just stunning. This is what liberals do. It's almost as if they are intentionally suicidal. I remember when AIDS first came along in the 1980s, what was the liberal response? To absolutely worship homosexuality and to elevate it to a civil right. And now we've got the Muslims, sleeper cells, who knows how many here in the country, getting ready to do all manner of dastardly deeds. And so what do the Democrats have to do? They have to elevate a Muslim into our national security apparatus to prove how tolerant they are. And that's why they're going to get all of us and themselves killed eventually if somebody doesn't stop these people. Let's see, did we have anything else? That's about it. All right. So that's Nancy Pelosi from the War File. Oops, what's this headline from the Denver Post sports section? I promised there would be no football interruptions. But my extremely attractive audio engineer just whipped out this Sunday's Denver Post, January 28th. The giant headline in a size 35 font says, "Crumbling Under the Pressure." That's about the Denver Broncos. Oh, but this scares me. If Gary Kubiak comes to Denver, I'll be scared because that guy's going to win a Super Bowl someday. I think he's already won one as an offensive coordinator. Anyway, Kubiak scares me since, of course, here at the McBurney compound, We want the Denver Broncos to wander in the wilderness for 40 years for their sins. And if they bring in Kubiak, they might be able to pull it together. That's what they need to do, is get rid of John Elway. You know, get the poison pill out of there. All right. But let's move on deeper and move from football into the war file. This is, as reported by the Associated Press, from the papal plane. The Pope has his own airplane, and he cares so much about the poor. Yeah, I know. I know he lives in an apartment, and he wears old shoes and says he's not a communist, and he flies around in his own plane. Oh, I guess it's the church's plane. It's not his plane, since he's poor. Pope Francis said last week aboard the papal plane, in regards to a question about the terrorist attacks in Paris, specifically on Charlie Hebdo, the atheistic porn comic that every conservative talk show host in the country says I should identify with now. The Pope was asked about the terrorist attacks and the murders of the innocent people, and the Pope said there are limits to freedom of expression, especially when it insults or ridicules someone's faith. Now, in a different conversation, I could understand a religious leader saying, you know, we shouldn't insult other people's religion or faith. But in direct response to a question about these massacres is not the time to say that there are limits to free expression, because free expression should not be limited by AK-47s, okay? But that's what the Pope says. The Vatican, according to the AP, the Vatican and four prominent French imams issued a joint declaration that denounced the attacks, but, see, that's where a but does not belong. There's certain places where there shouldn't be a but, and that's it. That's one of them right there. They should have just denounced the attacks and moved on. Gone on, whatever, promoting equal distribution of wealth or whatever the Pope does. But they also urge the media to treat religions with respect. Or what? Is the Pope going to start shooting up magazines? Well, no, he didn't say that. But it's as if he gave some level of understanding to what the terrorists did. And it's just inappropriate, and it's disgusting. Oh, by the way, the Vatican is also seeking to downplay reports that the Pope is a potential target for Islamic extremists. Now, do you think the Pope might be a target? I think he might be a target. Maybe the Pope is scared, and he wants to stand up and say, Je suis Muhammad. Maybe, because he's afraid of getting his own head cut off, which that's just despicable and cowardly. Just despicable, the Pope. I think that should be in our bad Pope file. We'll move that from the war file to the bad Pope file. All right, now, more about the terrorist massacres in France from the politics file. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, he had a request from a French Communist President, François Hollande, not to come to Paris for the big Weep Fest that all the pagans had last week, their unity rally, where they lit candles and prayed to something or someone. And anyway, just a big pagan weep fest. The French Communist President, François Hollande, specifically asked Benjamin Netanyahu not to come. Well, Netanyahu said, okay, I won't come. And then he found out Mahmoud Abbas, who's the Fatah, Hamas, Palestinian, PLO terrorist frontman. When Netanyahu found out he was going, Netanyahu decided at the last minute to go and apparently maneuvered his way to the front of the rally where he was not welcome. Several of his bodyguards basically had to drag him through the crowd to get him up there with the other pagan politicians so that he could get his picture taken with him. He ended up being photographed arm-in-arm with communist French President François Hollande, which just proves that if the Jews wanted to, they could conquer France, probably in a weekend. Hollande doesn't even want him there. Netanyahu ends up standing right next to him when the cameras go off. Hollande's lucky that Netanyahu didn't want to hurt him. Anyway, he ends up right between Hollande and German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and gets his picture taken. Well, Hollande had warned Netanyahu that it would be complicated and uncomfortable for to have any Jews here. This needs to be Judenfrei. But Netanyahu managed to go anyways. Hollande sat through most of the ceremony, but when Netanyahu's turn at the podium arrived, the French president got up from his seat and made an early exit. He walked out on Benjamin Netanyahu at the Pagan Wheat Fest, where I was expecting France to surrender to the Islamic State, but apparently the arrival of Netanyahu must have upset the program, and the French ran out of time and were not able to actually surrender. I think that's what's happened. All right, but serious news from the war, ladies and gentlemen. As reported by Bloomberg, you remember that the Pentagon's social media accounts were defaced last week. They were taken over by ISIS. And Bloomberg reports that this hack is actually a different kind of terrorist attack altogether, something called doxing, D-O-X-I-N-G, doxing or publishing people's personal information online. In this case, personal data of retired military officers was posted online, home addresses, retirement dates, social security numbers. And investigators say that this is designed to sow terror among the men and women in uniform. You remember the tweet that we all saw online and on the news from ISIS. It said, quote, "American soldiers, we are coming. Watch your back, ISIS." Well, among the documents that were posted was a 52-page spreadsheet entitled Retired Army General Officer Roster, addresses, emails, retirement dates of retired generals. And the hackers may have posted it, especially the personal addresses, as a sort of a hit list to make our generals, our retired generals, fear for their lives. And it's a brand new type of psychological warfare that the terrorists are practicing against our troops. And what do we do in response? Well, according to the Army Times, the U.S. is going to send 400 troops to train future Islamic terrorists in Syria. Oh, I'm sorry, I misread that. To train the moderate Syrian opposition. Yes, the effort to train Syrian rebels is part of the overall campaign to defeat the Islamic State, which I find interesting, because I believe it was the training of Libyan moderate rebels that led in part to the Islamic State. So I'm not sure how training other Muslims in Syria is going to help us defeat the Islamic State. But then again, I'm not as smart as the lawyers who are running the military. More than 2,100 troops are in Iraq, and Obama has authorized the deployment of up to 3,000 troops in Iraq. And so 3,000 in Iraq, 400 in Syria. It doesn't seem to me that Barry has any intention of destroying what did he vow to do? Just yesterday, he vowed to disrupt terrorism. I mean, we have gone, in the short span of one lifetime, from Winston Churchill declaring that we will fight in the fields and on the seas and in the air and we will never surrender, to, well, maybe we can disrupt. Hey! Hey! Woo! Everybody rock down! Don't you feel like trying? The sound of glory. Does it feel like love? Like a true now darling. The best in love. Play on right down the radio. Are you ready? The Weekly Worldview. Billy, put those guitars away. It's time to get back to the news. George Soros, according to the Washington Times, has been behind the scenes funding the entire hands-up, don't-shoot fiasco going on in the wake of the unpleasantness down in Ferguson, Missouri. According to most recent tax filings of his nonprofit Open Society Foundation, Mr. Soros has funded several groups involved in the protests, but of course, they were in no way directed to protest at the behest of the Open Society. It's just that they get a significant tens of thousands, maybe millions of dollars from the Soros Tides Foundation, Open Society Foundation. They've basically been busing people in to various protests across the country. But they say they don't have the ability to control or dictate what others say. They've just provided the buses and the money for dozens of nonprofit organizations to descend upon Ferguson and other parts of the country. And three of his organizations are in black and white, established the Hands Up Coalition, funded by the Tides Foundation. Yeah. The Hands Up Coalition is based on the false narrative that Michael Brown put his hands up and said, "Don't shoot," before the police officer shot him. And, well, that's been refuted and disproven. But the truth doesn't matter when you're trying to agitate and set one group against another, as Mr. Soros is doing. He was also, by the way, they remind us that Soros made his fortune betting against the British pound during a currency crisis in the early 1990s. He also helped round up Jews in World War II. He was a Jew himself in Hungary. Kept himself out of the Nazi prison camps by helping to turn in other Jews. And he's done a bunch of other bad stuff. Just a bad guy. A socialist. He made his billions, and now he wants to basically rule the world. And he very well may be, for all we know, for crying out loud. I've got a letter here into the personhood file. Ron Weddington, you remember him? He's the husband of Sarah Weddington. They argued for abortion in Roe versus Wade way back when. Well, it's been uncovered that Ron Weddington wrote a letter to Bill Clinton soon after Bubba was elected in 1992. Here's what Ron Weddington had to say to Bill Clinton. "Bubba, you can start immediately to eliminate the barely educated, unhealthy, and poor segment of our country. I'm not advocating mass extinction of these unfortunate people. What he's advocating is abortion and birth control." Yeah. I don't know if he addressed it, Bubba. I don't know if they were that close. He calls Hillary and Bill the perfect example of an American couple. He says, "Could either of you have gone to law school and achieved anything close to what you have if you had three or four more children before you were 20? No. You waited until you were established in your 30s to have one child. That is what sensible people do. What we need to do as a nation," Ron Weddington said to Bill Clinton on the eve of his inauguration, "what we need to do as a nation is prevent as much disease and as many poor babies as possible." Ron Weddington equates poor babies with disease. It's almost Nazi-esque. Well, not almost. It's Nazi-esque. I hate going to the Nazi reference too often, but the Nazis, they called other races diseases. Black people, Jews. And here, Ron Weddington, one of the architects of legal abortion in America, equates poor babies with disease. He says the government's going to have to provide vasectomies, tubal ligations, and abortions to all these poor people. Listen to what Weddington says. Now, this is 1992, remember. He says, "There have been about 30 million abortions in this country since Roe v. Wade. Think of all the poverty, crime, and misery we have, and then add 30 million unwanted babies to the scenario. As if babies contribute to poverty, crime, and misery. For crying out loud, babies are one of the few things that can civilize a young man and stop him from being a criminal, being miserable, and ending up in poverty." We're not shocked at all. And that's why these people are so vicious and bloodthirsty and evil, these child murder advocates, that only the reestablishment of personhood by law can stop them in their bloodlust. Speaking of poor babies, Mr. Weddington. Now, the Bible says that we shall know them by their fruits. Well, here is an example of the fruits of the lifelong efforts of Ron and Sarah Weddington. Pemberton, New Jersey. A South Jersey mother is in jail because authorities say 22-year-old woman doused her newborn baby with a flammable liquid and then set the child on fire in the middle of the road. The child was burned to death, set on fire by its mother while it was alive, and burned to death. Now, I want to remind you people that abortionists regularly burn babies to death every day in America with chemicals like saline, a very strong, salty, acidic solution that literally burns babies to death. But when this poor mother from Pemberton, New Jersey says, "Why don't we just do it in the road?" Well, then we all find it shocking. But she just did what the abortionists do. She's simply following the natural path that has been laid down by the child-killing advocates who are even now, as we speak, advocating for the right to abort children after they're born. That's what this woman did. She did what the abortionists did, but she just did it in the road. And, I mean, hopefully we are shocked. And hopefully we will continue to fight for those who are being led to the slaughter. Well, I know I will, and I hope you'll join me. All right. More from the personhood file. Oh, yes, this is very interesting. Martin Pistorius, doctors told the parents of Martin Pistorius when he was 12 years old that the boy had cryptococci meningitis and that, well, he went into a coma. And the doctors told the parents that they should take him home and let him die in peace. So they did take him home, told he was in a vegetative state. But Martin Pistorius lived 12 years in that vegetative state. His father would wake up every day at 5 a.m., dress him, put him in the car, and drive him to a special care center. 8 hours later, his dad would pick him up, bathe him, feed him, put him in bed, set his alarm for 2 hours later so that he could wake up and turn the boy on his side so that his son would not get bed sores. During those 12 years, there was never any indication that Martin's condition was improving, but his father loved him and continued to care for him. And by the time Martin was 14 or 15 years old, he began to wake up. And then he did wake up. And he said, about 2 years into my vegetative state, I began to wake up. I was aware of everything, just like any normal person. Everyone was so used to me not being there that they didn't notice when I began to be present again. The stark reality hit me that I was going to spend the rest of my life like that, totally alone. At the care center every day, Martin's caregivers played Barney reruns because they too believed he was a vegetable. But Martin said in a recent interview, "I cannot even express to you how much I hated Barney." Because he was awake and aware the whole time. Martin Pistorius is now 39 years old. He's in full control of his body. He's married, and he lives a normal life in Harlow, England. These are the type of people that the euthanasia advocates and the child-killing advocates and the forces of darkness who are against the personhood of every innocent human being, this is the kind of person that they would have had the mother and father kill this young boy. But instead, they're a testimony to love. Very inconvenient, very difficult, very hard, not pretty. But that's true love. True love is not always easy. It's not always pretty. But true love will win out in the end because God is in heaven. And God set in motion physical and spiritual laws that cannot be violated. They cannot be broken. They will break the one who insists on violating. And those who violate them may violate them for a time, and they may even appear to be successful. They may even appear to be winning. But in the end, love wins out. And it will be followed by the dispensation of fury and justice upon those who would hurt God's children and who would hurt those who are completely unable to defend themselves or even speak for themselves. True love will win out. All right. Now, speaking of the physical laws and how reliable they are, I want to end on something a little bit more upbeat. Although that story is upbeat, I mean, I got to tell you that the guy woke up. The dedication of the father is inspirational. And the fact that the man, he's now alive, he's living life. Praise God. But to end on something upbeat, a pizza delivery driver in DeKalb County, Georgia, arrived at her delivery location and a male person began approaching the vehicle. She thought he was there to pick up the pizza. Well, when he got to her, he produced a handgun and forced her out of the vehicle and onto the ground. She was afraid, so she grabbed her own handgun and shot the suspect. Yes. The suspect was later found in a nearby yard suffering from a gunshot wound to his face. These are the physical laws that God set into motion being applied by a pizza driver to a thug. And we praise the Lord for that, too. Now, the pizza delivery driver's family is scared that she may lose her job because she was carrying a gun at work. And anyway, I wouldn't worry too much about losing a pizza delivery job. Number one, she could probably find employment over at the National Rifle Association, Gun Owners of America. She'll probably land on her feet, is my guess. And I guess that's all we've got this week. I'll have to come back to the Higgs boson next week, I guess. We'll get to that. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Theology Online, RealScienceRadio.com, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, along with my extreme track. Audio engineer, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.